Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Well, today's guest is Harvey Martin. Harvey is the author of a lot of really neat books on Native culture and the founder of Wisdom Keepers, meetings with Native American spiritual elders. I was introduced to Harvey's work through two books, The Wisdom Keepers and Travels in a Stone Canoe. And I guess it was in Travels in a Stone Canoe and that I read quite a bit about Charlie Two Trees, and I may be wrong, but let me introduce Harvey. Go ahead and introduce yourself to the folks and tell them about yourself and your work. Go ahead.
All right. Well, introduce myself.
Uh-huh.
Well, my name is Harvey Arden, author of a few books, Wisdom Keepers, Dream Keepers, Travels in a Stone Canoe. For 23 years, I was on the staff of National Geographic, a dream job, writing stories all around the world on various subjects. In the early 1980s, got involved in some stories about Native Americans and have been in Indian country pretty much ever since.
Ah. Yeah, I know. I really enjoyed your books. I first read Wisdom Keepers and then Travels in a Stone Canoe. I'd always heard about Charlie Two Trees and never knew a whole lot about him. But for those that aren't familiar with Harvey's, I guess you wrote some of them with a co-author.
Steve Wall was involved in a couple of the books, Wisdom Keepers and Stone Canoe, a fine photographer and writer in his own right.
Outstanding. A lot of wonderful prophecy articles from, oh, you name it, from Seminoles to Sioux to... I guess you've been all over the world. Where was the germination of the seed of working with tribal people?
It began at National Geographic about two-thirds of my, through my career there. I left there in 91, started in 68. Uh-huh. And so for 23 years I was roaming the world, but it's a very big world, and if you draw a line where I've been on it, it's only a few of the places I might have been, that's for sure, but a lot of places for sure. I did stories in the Middle East. I did stories in Sumatra and Denmark and all sorts of places, including lots in the U.S. But in the early 80s, Steve Wall, my colleague at that time, and I got the idea for a story what we thought would be Native American medicine men. And you just mentioned two trees. Steve had been down in Georgia doing a story on the Chattooga River, which is the river that's in the movie Deliverance. Uh-huh. And met this rather mysterious Cherokee fella, Two Trees. And Two Trees told him a story that he himself was a middle-level herbalist, is what he called himself, and he sold various healing oils and teas and things like that. But he did go around and meet a lot of the great medicine men of that time, and he said that two of them, Wolf Sequoia up in Cherokee country and Josie Billy down in Seminole country, had both asked him to come and study with them. And Two Trees had thought about it a while and says, well, I'm not really worthy of that. And he declined in each case. And then very shortly after that, both of those men died. It's probably about 1980, 81 or so. And Two Trees was swept by remorse that he had turned down invitations from these great elders, and now they were gone. There was no way... he could become involved in them, and it came to him that he should go on a journey of penance, in a sense, to visit the various elders of what he called the seven different Indian nations, the great Indian groupings. It was a story told in Cherokee country that there were seven different great Indian nations. And he told this story to Steve, who was down there photographing another story for National Geographic, and Steve says, wow, that sounds like a heck of a story. Native American medicine man going around among the great medicine men of all the nations. And Two Trees says, why don't we do it for National Geographic? And Steve thought about it, and he says, well, we'll give it a try. I'll talk to the people at Geographic. Bill Garrett at that time was the editor. And in fact, Steve called me up. I was working at Geographic at the time. He said, Harvey, I've met this Indian. And I said, yeah, so great, you've met an Indian. And he started to tell me this story, and I said, well, certainly we could put it through as a story idea here at Geographic. And he says, well, I'm going to bring Two Trees up to see Garrett. And I said, well, okay, all right, whatever you do, fine. That still sounds like a great story. I can't guarantee they'll okay it. But so Steve did just that. He and Two Trees came up to Washington, went in to see Garrett and Mr. Gilka, the head of photography at that time, and various others, and... lo and behold, they bought the story. I mean, not buy it, they bought the idea. And assigned me to be the editor of it, and Two Trees to be the author, and Steve to be the photographer. And he and Steve set off on their journey. This is all told in Travels in a Stone Canoe. And that, through many, many vicissitudes and the early disappearance, actually, of two trees, wherein I became not the editor but the author of the story, because two trees took off and said, you guys got to do this. I'm going my own road. And in a very mystical way, and I went up and talked to Garrett, and he says, well, you write it then, Harvey. He says, it turned out that two trees had a lot of, for one medicine man to go to another is quite an occasion, and more likely to be a rivalry than a friendship, or at least it very often will be. And that was the case with two trees. Every medicine man he saw, they didn't like him, they didn't care for him. And we thought that maybe I would carry less baggage, just being an ignorant white fella, as you might say. And that it was true, there was no rivalry. So when we went to see the various elders, we could go more as them as teachers, rather than Two Trees was always trying to teach them something which they didn't care for. So that got me involved. I knew nothing about medicine men or Native Americans, very little. I'd been on staff at Geographic. I'd certainly been to a few reses over the years. But and it came to us that it really wasn't medicine men that we were most interested in, at least not me personally, and I don't think Steve either. I was not into any medicine. I was into it more for a sense of a spiritual path, or I wanted to find out more about it, and they said, well, you're not really looking for medicine, man. What you probably should do is go see the elders. And the elders, I don't know that that word strikes a bell with everybody in those days. I didn't realize it really had a capital E. And we're talking about the highest people on each of the reses, those who have lived through it all and are accorded great respect and authority and well-deserved. They're the center of the community rather than like in our white community where you're lucky if you get an old age home. You do become a senior citizen, and I won't put that down, being one myself, that it certainly has certain advantages. But it's not being an elder. I do not have the community knocking at my door asking whether we should stay in Iraq or not. And but if were I on an Indian reservation, it would be the elders who were discussing this and whose opinion would be honored and followed usually by the community. And so elders, spiritual elders, or as we came to call them finally, wisdom keepers. We were looking for a word to be the title of our book, which we finally did. Geographic actually killed the story. They thought it was a little bit too mystical. We had eagles flying in, and people telling us wondrous stories, and they got a little uneasy with it. And they killed the story, which was a great blow to us at the time. However, Steve went ahead and published a few of the pictures in New Age magazine of the elders, and a small publisher on the West Coast, Beyond Words Publishers, saw that little story, called Steve and says, why don't we do a book? And Steve called me and said, Harvey, you've got all the tapes and you're the writer. At that time, he had not begun writing yet. And so I found myself going through all these tapes that had been pretty much tossed in a drawer and just about forgotten of the various elders we had seen. And then we went out and saw some more for the book and published a book in 1990, Beyond Words Press Publishers, Wisdom Keepers. What was the subtitle? Meetings with Native American Spiritual Elders. And actually, Geographic was not pleased we did this. But, I mean, they killed it, and here it is. And lo and behold, it seemed to have come out at the right time.
You wrote
the right subject, and was written and photographed in such a way that it became very popular with a lot of people. Now in six or seven languages, I think they're going to reprint the original edition, hopefully just in the next few months. I'm never quite sure if that's so or not. And it started me off on a whole different track in my life. Instead of being Harvey, the National Geographic writer, I left Geographic with some encouragement from them. And began at age 55 going around to elders and writing down their words, staying with them, not just floating through the way a journalist might, but staying for several days, coming back 2, 3, 5 times, or some I've been back to 30 times, like Onondaga. And have continued producing these books, and would not have guessed that following what became clear to me was a spiritual path for me, that I would find myself in Leavenworth Prison. That was a surprise, unexpected, and to visit the famous Native American falsely imprisoned activist Leonard Peltier. I'm sure you've heard of him. I, through a series of vicissitudes, became the editor of a book by Leonard.
Prison Writings.
Prison Writings, My Life is My Sundance. That came out in 1999, published amazingly by a respectable publisher, St. Martin's Press. Also did extremely well. It's in 6 or 7. I don't know. One guy just wants to put it into Turkish.
My word.
I don't know how far along he's gotten, but it's in Dutch, and it's had a worldwide appeal, even though Leonard still sits in prison there. For a guy who is sitting in a room no bigger than your average clothes closet, he reaches out to the whole world. It's amazing. And so I've just gotten into Indian country for some reason, me, a white man, a Jewish man, and not a good Jew, but born that way, and still greatly respect the tradition, if not their politics in Israel. And here I find myself, just 69 a few weeks ago, on my 70th year here, involved in all of this. So you tell me, how does it happen? I remember Matthew King said, you're lucky. He was an old Lakota wisdom keeper. I did a book on Noble Red Man. He said, you're lucky, Harvey. He said, Creator has a use for you. More than most people can say. So to be useful, I guess, I think a lot of people think I have, some think I haven't. I continue sitting here causing trouble on my computer and sending emails to the world, trying to get Leonard out. I've been working at that for 6, 7 years now. It can get you depressed, except it's really holy work. And you shouldn't get depressed over it. And I think he does periodically, but normally his spirits are high. And he's lived a fabulous life, even if 30 years of it has been there in prison. So half his life he spent in prison for something that the whole world knows he did not commit, for a crime that he did not commit, that the FBI fabricated for him. Everybody knows that. Even the courts have virtually admitted it. And yet he sits there, as Amnesty International calls him, a political prisoner. Not in there because of any crime. He's in there because he stood up as a leader for his people, and there's a lot of folks don't want any Native American or any other person to do that. Back in the 70s, when they put him and many others away, they had a little project via the FBI called COINTELPRO, Counterintelligence Program, and it was really a dirty tricks program, but a pretty deadly dirty tricks program. And they put away, of course, the Black Power movement, and it was almost incidental, I suppose, to them that they put away the guys from AIM, the American Indian Movement, who were standing up for their people and were tired of seeing their land raped and their people raped over and over and over again. And if you do that, you become a criminal in our society, if you stand up for your people. And the Black Power, many of them were killed or imprisoned, and the same with the Red Power, the American Indian Movement. And here am I, a white guy, somehow 100% in lockstep with these people who believe that justice and freedom and democracy and all these words the presidential candidates are spouting lately actually mean something.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
And I would like to see, before I kick the bucket, because I've had a good life, I'd like to see Leonard get out and have a little bit of his.
Yeah.
And rather than for the great crime of being innocent.
He's what, 60 now?
He's 60. Went in when he was 31. They arrested him up in Canada. The whole story is a vast story. Peter Matheson wrote a marvelous book, In the Spirit of Crazy Horse. 600 pages. That was back in 1980.
Of course, we interviewed him.
Early on, it was taken off the bookshelves because of lawsuits from the FBI and various people. Then Leonard himself published a book, This Prison Writings, that I was privileged to be the editor of, and we've just put out a brand new book on Leonard and myself and a bunch of other of his supporters that takes it up right to maybe a month ago. It came out on September 12th was the official date. Mm. It's called Have You Thought of Leonard Peltier Lately? Mm-hmm. And to me, that and the Wisdom Keepers are of one solid piece. There is no difference. Leonard indeed is a wisdom keeper. Talk to anybody who knows him in prison or who has dealt with him over the years. He was just nominated for the Nobel Prize, and I was really saddened last week to see he did not win it, though I know that the lady who did was a wonderful lady there in Africa. But he's exhausted all of his appeals.
Who won?
Pretty much. His lawyers are, you know, you would think that innocence would get you out. Proven and reproven time and again, but that's not so, and that's why he's a political prisoner. It's why none of the wisdom keepers are probably that popular with the dominant society in general. They do a lot of white bashing, but there's some great, great people that I've been privileged to visit. I've been one of the luckiest guys on this planet to have sat at the foot and the knee of these various men and ladies and listen to them put down their words, and as best as I could get them out so the rest of the world can read them, and other people have been very appreciative.
Well, you don't.
So is that who Harvey Arden is? Gee, I don't know. I've also got three novels I want to write, and going to see if I can get them out in whatever years remain to me here.
Well, a minute ago, you asked the question, how could it happen? And I'd like to submit to you a possibility. I have a friend named Donald Panther Yates, who is has been up till a few months ago a professor at Georgia Southern University. And he's done extensive DNA research and research into Jews and crypto-Jews. And he drew the connection between the families and Indian agents that had, and oddly enough, mostly here in America and less in Canada, but the families that served early on as the earliest agents, especially in the Southeast, were people that were not known to be Jews, but he was able to trace their genealogy. For instance, I believe the Perrymans were come from a Sephardic Jewish families, and the trading tradition, if not the religion, continued in their family. And of course, the old attitudes toward positive social change that that many people of Greater Israel carry, certainly translated down through the 500 years since 1492, when a lot of them were kicked out of Spain and other places. But he's drawn this tremendous connection between Jews and crypto-Jewish people, even people that may not know they're Jews, and the direct assistance and legal assistance that Native Indians here in the United States received very early on. And without that assistance, they would never have reached the political gains that they have made through the years. And he's we're going to be interviewing him in the next few weeks.
Well, certainly sounds interesting. I can tell you that being my age, I lived through the Holocaust, the so-called Holocaust, the murder of the usual figure given is 6 million Jews for being Jews in Europe in World War II. As a child, I lived through that. I didn't know it. I didn't know it, what was going on there. And but had I not, by some blessed accident, my grandparents come here, I would have been one of those who died in those camps. And I've always had an agonizing sense that there's no way I can ever in any way redeem that or do anything about that. That happened. By the time I realized it happened, I was already probably in my teens. And before I truly grasped it, I'm sure I was in my 30s or 40s. But there was another Holocaust going on in this world that I found myself sort of, despite myself, sucked into, like into an eddy or a whirlpool. And that's the Holocaust against Native American peoples, which has killed many more than 6 million over the years. Tens of millions died for being Indian, not because they were good or bad or this or that. They were Indian. Leonard Peltier sits in jail now because he's Indian, because they had to pin this rap on somebody, and they didn't really care which Indian they got. Get an Indian. Get any Indian. That's an old Civil War phrase, right? Get any Indian you see. Well, there was a time was getting any Jew you can see. There'll be a time for everybody, maybe. It's a difficult time. Right now, 2004, to be an American, to be a Jew, and to look at the state of the world really tears me up inside. But working for Indian people, well, I don't work for Indian people. I just... I do what I do, but I'm proud of that, and I feel in a little bit that I have redeemed somehow that terrible Holocaust against my people. I wish all the Holocausts would cease. I pray, I don't know, I don't like the state of this world today. Anyway, I keep doing my work. I try to make it a little better. Like Leonard says, you're not supposed to be perfect. You're supposed to be useful. And if you make yourself useful in this life, I guess that's about as high a state as you get. That's what the saints did to become saints.
Mm-hmm.
So Miracles, I don't know about, but there's sure a lot of people that believe in them, and I've seen one or two that pass for me. I haven't quite seen the Red Sea part, but I've seen, you know, old Frank Fool's Crow pray an eagle out of the sky. That I've seen. And I've seen rainbows that only one man knew how to bring. And a state of mind you come into when you come into the native world, gee, we so look down on it in our white society. Why, these people are just losers, right? Well, they knew a lot more and know a lot more about being human than an awful lot of white people do who don't even think about it, I guess. So I don't want to disparage white people. Hey, I am one. And but these are dark times we're living in, and it's up to each person to do something about it. I can't tell you what. Can't tell you what. I know what I'm doing. So anyway, Blue Otter, let's go on with this. Where do you want to take this conversation?
Well, I know. You know, you said what can you do, and I know Red Elk, and I, you know, Red Elk's a member of the Twisted Hair Society, and he's also a member of the Red Web Society, and these are very highly placed. Native societies for someone that has so much white blood. But Red Elk is constantly pounding on the concept of everybody needs to get a direct connection with the Creator, and points out that, you know, when Moses came down the mountain, he had a little bit different law than the second time, you know, and I think he points to, you know, if they hadn't been worshiping the golden calf, they may have been given the original law. The original law was probably just to love one another. Very simple. Very simple. Take care of each other and live for other people.
It has not triumphed in this world, I'm sorry to say.
It hasn't. Well, I think it will.
Maybe on an individual level, in a lot of lives we all know love, but I don't see a lot of it on the battleground of life out there in Iraq and wherever.
Yeah,
there are a lot of people clamoring about it.
Edgar Casey said the same thing. He said, you know, the same kind of concepts. And, of course, the elders have, too. But, you know, there's not a, the average Indian nowadays and the average white person, you know, thanks to standardization. It's the old Roman system of standardization, you know, the same names and, you know, discourage individuality and, you know, encourage the team and,
Yeah, well, maybe we're becoming ants or wasps or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Build our hives, I don't know.
Or less and less.
I don't understand this new world. I thought I understood the world until 4 years ago, and now I'm just amazed at who we've become.
Well,
I just can't even grasp it. I can't think about it. If I do think about it, I go, you know, into a fit of depression or run out in the street screaming.
What Sunbury used to say, he says, just go dig a hole and scream into it, and then bury it.
Probably as good a thing you can do as any.
Sure.
I don't know. I scream out onto the Internet, you know. I've just been sending out an email here on behalf of Leonard. And I addressed the email to President John Kerry.
Got that one.
And did you get that one? And half a dozen or more people have responded. Oh, it's been more than a dozen. In the most vitriolic anger at this, I'm beginning to believe the polls. These people must be out there. They just already despise Kerry with a passion that, my God, I thought I disliked Bush, but, gee, I'm amazed. To me, I can't understand how Mr. Bush would have a single vote. I just can't, even though my son is a devout Bushite.
Well, and, you know, George Wallace said there's a dime's worth of difference between, you know, all the political parties. It's kind of hard to, you know, the thing, you know, I was raised a conservative, but I see the value in, you know, changing out, even though. And I'm not so much a conservative nowadays. You know, I'm more of a libertarian.
What Mr. Bush is doing has nothing to do with conservatives.
Oh, it sure doesn't. But
it's
even though George Washington said that the worst thing could happen to this country is for a two-party system to get hold, I think it's the only thing that's kept worse things in check, because it provides a way for the pendulum to swing back and forth. And, you know, you get...
Well, I'm not sure it's going to swing back and forth.
Yeah, who knows? You know, of course, republics usually only last. You know, democracy is good for 50 years. Republics, 200 years and maybe a little more. And then they seem to, you know, break down into people wanting more and more security. I mean, history's already been written. You just go back and read the history of Rome and you can see what's happening.
Well, all looks new to me.
People want security. People want, and they're willing to give up their freedom to give it, even though, you know, the Founding Fathers said, hey, if you're willing to give it up, you don't deserve it. And
apparently so. Apparently so.
People just don't want to.
The world.
They don't want to participate anymore in their own destiny, and they just they're so concerned about the next meal and the next car payment. And
well, you know, I tried to determine what's different about. Is there something that looks different in a Republican or a Democrat? I don't see it.
No. Color of the.
You see two guys on TV. You know, if there's two guys on TV, one of them is bashing Bush and one of them is bashing Kerry, but can you pick them out with the sound off? No, you can't. Sometimes you can. Maybe Republicans are try to be a little trimmer. I don't know, but often you're mistaken on that. And I don't understand this world. And here I have been pursuing wisdom all my life, and I don't have a clue to how we can possibly be in Iraq bombing Fallujah right now. I just don't have a clue to that. And I know there are people see reasons. I don't. So it's this is a very difficult time, a time you really have to stand up, because the next generation may not be able to stand up.
Yeah.
And but then you're just going to get knocked down, I suppose. Well, we'll see.
Sometimes.
Just a few weeks here. If we have four more years of Bush, I just... I think my political hopes would be at zero.
Sometimes books have to be written, and then authors have to die, and all his books need to be burned, and one will be found 100 years later.
Well,
you know, and everybody
being
will
an author is a lucky thing in a way, in that you leave to future generations, if they don't burn every copy of your book, some part of yourself. And other than a scratching on a tombstone. And I guess you live on that way, but I don't think any authors are quite aware of that. I guess we all think of it, you want to be immortal, right? I don't really care. And I would happily give my life to see this world improve just a notch.
Have you kept up a bunch interest, or do you know much about what's going on down in Australia with the Aboriginals down there? I haven't read Dreamkeepers yet, so I was.
Yeah.
I thought to that. After
well, see what's being done to Indians in this country, and white people, by and large, don't even know that, because it's rather amazing. But you go to Australia, and you can multiply it by 10 negatively.
Mm.
They are treated so badly. And they live so poorly, though there's a certain level at which poverty becomes freedom.
Uh-huh.
But not in this society anymore, not with planes flying overhead and roads being built through. And Aboriginal people have it very, very, very hard. This my book, Dreamkeepers, goes into it a bit. What a white guy happens to see and record. But it's very tough there, and they too are very high people. Very mystical, magical, miracles on every side. Hey, if you can look down at the dirt and pick up a gold nugget with no metal detector, that's not a miracle. I've seen ladies go out and come back with a handful of gold flakes. They had nothing with them but a little straw. And they blow on the sand all day long to collect these flakes from certain places. Come home with a little handful of flakes. But Aboriginal people are beautiful people, wonderful people, and very tough life there in Australia.
I've got a mutual friend through Red Elk, Dave, a friend named Dave. He married an Aboriginal woman, and and he's got a place that's off the grid, and of course, I guess their seasons are upside down down there, so I guess he's
everything is upside down.
Yeah, they're going into spring now, and he's one of these Australians that's really gotten it, you know, and he's learning from Aboriginals, and the ranks are growing slowly. It's unfortunate it hasn't happened sooner with more Australians, but
be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for $1. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting
right.
garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond.
Put
it under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
I don't know.
Well, there's a lot of Australians who feel very deeply about Aboriginals, work on behalf of them, treat them with respect. But the society as a whole, no, and it's turning, for a while it was turning towards the Aboriginals. They were allowed to have a economic political movement sponsored by the government called ANZIC. And it's just an organization just now being dismantled now after 15 or 20 years. At least they could vote for their leaders. And so they're in a bad state there. I have not kept up with the latest news.
Oh, their tent embassy that they had down.
Oh, yeah, they've had that for some years.
Has that been torn down yet?
But,
yeah,
they continually try to. That's just a tent. But
set up a group of tents next to a state house and.
Yeah, so I guess you can look at the world, to the victors go everything. To the losers goes nothing. And that's not quite the world that I would build. And I work against it every day. But it may be the most practical solution, just kill them all. That's what they wanted to do with the Indians. That's what they wanted to do with the Jews. That's what they want to do with a lot of people. Anybody gets in your way, kill them. And now that we've got the weapons that I suppose we can kill just about anybody. They don't seem to be doing too well with the atom bomb against the IUD. The atom bomb seems to be losing. But they're afraid to use the atom bomb. I fear we will come to a point when they're not.
Well, I think atom bomb is a thing of the past. I think what's next is bioweapons that target certain DNA, you know.
Many weapons that we can use. I hear about a sound beam now that will mobilize vast groups of people just by blowing the sound through them. I don't know. I'm sort of happy to be going on 70 and maybe not have to live through all that. It doesn't look like a pretty world ahead. But prosperous here. You still go out. The restaurants are packed. The streets are roaring. I live in Washington, D.C. The place is flourishing. my son takes me out to a Chinese restaurant. He says, look at this. Where else in the world do you see this? Prosperity. How can you be damning our policies when it brings us this? How can you be against Iraq when we're trying to establish democracy in Iraq, right? And have a foothold in the Middle East. Save your own Israel. Of course, I totally disagree with Israel's policies these days. So I'm just going to let the the world's going to have to take care of itself. I lived in a, not that it was ever peaceful, but it was a quieter, less interesting time somehow. The Cold War sort of, I don't know, froze people into you were in this position or that. You were, you know, if you were on this side, you were always right. They were always wrong. And now if you're a Democrat or Republican, you're either always right or you're always wrong. Right? I don't understand these two parties. I know you seem to think they're the saving grace here. Maybe so. They're not mentioned in the Constitution. It doesn't say go to parties. And the parties now are totally all of them. They're radical. They all vote the same way. That's what there's three or four or five will vote differently if they can without changing the total. I don't know if that's democracy. Iraq can have it. So anyway, to talk about the problems of the world, let's talk about smaller problems. Give me a small problem and I'll work at it.
Well, tell us. I
don't want to depress your audience here.
Okay, we were. I mean, it's just old. It's this old news. It's what keeps us our juices flowing. We were introduced to you because of the interview with Mike Kuzma, who's Leonard's one of his attorneys. What do you think?
I listened to your interview with Mike.
Yeah, what do you think?
Very good, excellent.
I think it's an excellent avenue to take, even if they're not able to get him out through the Freedom of Information.
No, you see, Leonard is representative of much more than Leonard. Much more even than simply a representative of Indian people. But he's representative as the government, or factions within the government, to be more accurate. Can totally screw you, excuse me.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but totally. In broad daylight, can lie and cheat and steal, and everybody knows it, and they don't even get tapped on the wrist, and you go to prison for two life terms, plus 7 years. And how is that? How does that happen? They just had another trial in Rapid City. It was worse than Leonard's 25 years ago. Put an Indian man away for life in a completely fabricated trial. And how does it happen? And nobody cares, much less does anything about it. You can't even care. They call me, you know, write me back, who gives a damn about Leonard Peltier? You know, go screw yourself and die, you know. I can't tell you the letters you get back.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't ever quite get used to them. People want to hurt me. Yeah, it does hurt. It does hurt to be talked to that way by anybody. But I get less angry these days, I guess, than I once did. Into an angry state, I suppose.
Did you make it to the dedication of the National Museum?
Yes, I was over at the museum.
What'd you think?
I didn't get inside, but... I was outside there during the grand days, and it's a hell of a building. There's people that criticize what's inside and don't criticize it, but it is a great tribute to Indian people. I don't know what degree it really deals with Indian people's problems today. There's many Indians now as there were 100 years ago, or more. But their problems, I don't know that they're addressed in the museum. Maybe they are. I can't speak good or ill of it, except that it's a great monument and long overdue. And I'm sure they will improve it as time goes on. It is being run by Indian people, but they are under government scrutiny.
Sure.
Government organizations that very rarely wanted to get involved with the Wisdom Keeper type, so-called, because they do a lot of white bashing, and, well, they might. And if we can't listen to criticisms of us, then just keep it out of the museums. No criticisms. I don't know what's in there, you know.
I can just hear the elders.
It sounds like it's got very little to do with modern Indians and a lot to do with Senator Nighthorse Campbell Silver.
Yeah, good. I can hear some of the elders say, well, they really wanted to do something, wanted to return all that stuff they stole that's in the museum, you know?
Yeah, well, Indians wouldn't know what to do with it if you gave them all that we've stolen. I remember I was covered a story years ago in the 80s for National Geographic, the desecration of an Indian burial mound in Kentucky. And we went down there to Slack Farm, a place near Union City, Kentucky, Uniontown, Kentucky. And there was this old cornfield, actually pockmarked, much worse than anything you've seen on the moon, where all the things had been dug out by these people that actually rented it after the season. And Indians came down protesting. And I met this elderly gentleman who was what you call a surface hunter. He went around with a stick. He didn't dig. Just looking through the hills and the woods there for Indian artifacts, basically. And finding quite a few with just a stick. So he didn't dig. But he then said they want their bones back. You know, they wanted to rebury all the bones that had been thrown aside when the people stole all the artifacts from the cemetery. And he says, well, and they demanded that they demand that they sent elders down. Leon Shenandoah from Onondaga went down there to help rebury and reconsecrate all these bones.
Dennis Means.
Jaw bones, leg bones, finger bones, arm bones, hip bones, you name it.
Oh, yeah. Dennis
put them in boxes. There was a story in Geographic, yeah. I think it was 1986 or thereabouts. And
my friend Danny.
But this fellow said, if they want bones, I'll show them bones. And he went around. He started pointing to tens of thousands of bones and broken pottery shards. If you want to collect them all, fine. But there weren't enough Indians in the state to collect the bones that were on just a few hilltops in Kentucky. That area was densely populated once. That's the Ohio River, just before it flows into the Mississippi. They had mounds that looked like Aztec mounds, and they were all torn down to make farmlands. Very few of them were left. A few of them, like Cahokia, they still have exhibits of what was there once. It was a vast civilization was there. They had agriculture. Society. It was not a bunch of Indians lurking in the woods. They only were lurking in the woods after we got there, and they were hiding to get away from us because we're going to kill them if we found them. And so they have their continuing Holocaust to this day. The problems in Indian country to this day are enormous. They continue to be victimized in every conceivable way. They've been disarmed, disenfranchised, diseducated, if you might say, and they're just any local entrepreneur who wants a piece of Indian land is likely to be able to get it, you know, through hook or crook, most likely the latter. And, but this is not addressed in our society, and I don't know if it ever will be. Just waiting for the Indians to all die off. I don't think they're going to. But that seems to be a vague hope, like just like the Middle East is going to be democratic. We'll go and kill lots of people to prove that point, which has no point at all. So there you are. I'm getting depressing again. You better find a happier guest, because these days it's hard to be positive.
Well, are you familiar with the spiritual elders that are working? I think it's spiritualelders.org. Have you ever been on that website and seen what...
No, I haven't. I haven't. Most of the elders I worked with, now that I'm 70 myself, the great majority of them have passed on. I'm looking forward to meeting them again in the near future.
Well, Spiritual Elders was led by Leon Sacatero, and he's lives on a reservation right near Laguna, New Mexico. And I guess the Mayan elders contacted him a few years ago, and they had a couple of ceremonial items, sticks, that were brought up to that res, and they were duplicated up here. I haven't met Leon, but my teacher, John Red Hat, lived about 9 miles from him and had participated in some of the gatherings, but they got quite an organization going. They had a gathering a couple of years ago it wasn't as successful as they wanted it to be, but they are out there. They're pretty much strictly a federally recognized Indian affair. They're trying to stay away from anybody who's state recognized like me, but I guess they feel that's the way to go. But they are they're definitely out there at spiritualelders.org, and I guess a fellow by the name of Wableza is.
Yeah, I've seen that name online.
Yeah, he's. It's really interesting. He's also associated with Manitaka in Hot Springs, Arkansas. But he was very viciously. I guess he has a daughter that married a Chickasaw, and while he was down on the Chickasaw Reservation, was beaten and left for dead. And you know, brain damage, and he's coming back from it, but it was just appalling. He couldn't get help at the reservation, and you know they put him into an ambulance, and they wouldn't help him at the first hospital. I mean, it was just unbelievable. It's unbelievable that you know some Chickasaw men beat him up, and they beat him up because. It had to do with medicine power, wanted him to do something and he refused to do it, and they were drunk and just beat him to within an inch of his life. He's coming back from it. But I guess what had happened is Don Alejandro, as a 13th generation Quechua Mayan high priest, he had a dream of connecting elders in South America with those in North America. He wanted to help fulfill that old Runa prophecy of when the condor of the South shares its tears with the eagles of the North, Mother Earth would begin to awaken. So he sent the staff from his family that they'd held for many generations to Leon Secretero to help the elders up here unite. That happened back in 1999. And Leon lives with the Kenyan Sito band of Navajos. And so for that year, they kept the staff, and which has helped them guide them in the ways that they needed to unite with respect and so forth. And they're still building that organization. The White Roots of Peace Council, which there's, I'm not sure, to my knowledge, John was the last member. I think it was the original organization that was set up to make sure the prophecies were taught. And
that's John, Iroquois, right?
John Red Hat was a member of it, and he decided he wanted to keep it going. And so before he passed away, he walked west the 30th of December last year. But this is his work. The women asked me to be a spokesman for it, but this is really John's work and his dream. But he was a Cherokee elder, really interesting person. I don't know. He was a fellow that was born. See, this area, southern Missouri, is a place where a lot of Cherokees stayed when two-thirds of the tribe. Came along the Trail of Tears, but a third had already been here since the late 1700s. And when the two-thirds majority came to Oklahoma and they moved the reservation, which was in Arkansas, they moved everybody over to Oklahoma. The chief at that time, John Ross, illegally deposed Chief Rogers and said, well, if you're sub-chiefs don't show up at a certain date at a certain time at the Illinois campground, you're going to be declared outlaws. So a bunch of them just basically ignored the whole thing about Oklahoma and just stayed where they were, and that was to one of John's families. And they were he was from the Long Hair Clan, the Catua Society, which is a spiritual core. It's kind of if there was a Cherokee church, that'd be it. But John spent 28 years in the Air Force, but he was very... very active with AIM, but early on, this is a guy that was raised in the old Cherokee religion and born about 1930, and when he was about 9 years old, he started having dreams about the Holocaust, of all things. Learned to speak German in his sleep, and later on moved to Tulsa as a teenager, was befriended by some Jewish boys, ended up learning Hebrew, and was adopted by a Levitical priest. And he became an associate of one of the leading Zionist, I can't remember his name, the rabbi at the time, just Joseph Jason, Rabbi Joseph Jason.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow. But tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better, I feel a lot better, and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
And, you know, ended up becoming a Jew and went through the whole law of return and became a citizen of the State of Israel. So he's an American citizen and Israeli citizen, and worked with the Air Force and security for this country and saw a lot of things and did a lot of things. But when he was for a lot of those years stationed at Cheyenne Mountain, and and, you know, when he wasn't on duty, he was in Denver, other places, you know, working with AIM and doing different things. And really interesting man, wonderful teacher. And he saw real value in Judaism. And, you know, you said something about, you know, not being a good Jew. Well, you know, John knew, and he told me, he says, I live here in Albuquerque. He says, I can go down and attend synagogue with the Hasids anytime I want to. And he says, there's two ways in Hasidism. He says, you can either do the 900 different laws that they have, or it was a 600 positive, 300 negative, or vice versa. He says, or you...
613, I think.
Mm-hmm. He says, or you can live by the Spirit. And he says, that's fine with them. And because if you live by the Spirit, there's no need for the laws. And that's a concept that the Hasids understand, and they were perfectly comfortable with that. But John was a man that had a constant connection with the Creator, listened to him constantly, and up to the moment of his death was perfectly reconciled that he was fully in Creator's will. And a book was published about him called Red Hat Speaks that's available. And, you know, Harvey, you know, it might be something, you know, maybe the, you know, if you're having a little bit of trouble now with the way the world's going, you might want to read the chapter about surrendering to Creator, you know. And it's, you know, it's a $6 e-book, and you can get it online. I'll send you a link about it. But it really helps. It really helps me.
I look forward to that.
And you just have to kind of surrender and go with it, and know that there's a plan out there. And
I think that's always what I've liked about Indian philosophy. It doesn't have all these 613 rules. And, of course, I don't follow any specific native religion. You start getting into them, there are customs, if not rules, in everyone. Everyone is different.
Oh, yeah.
But there is a general feeling of connection with the Creator. There's a general feeling that there is something sacred about life, not just to be set apart, but about all life. And it has a very meaningful, emotional connection to the earth, to reality that we find ourselves thrown into, and often reminds me of Zen, or maybe the Kabbalistic end of some of it, of Judaism. Or it's very mystical without being, you know, esoterically mystical. And
a lot of people draw parallels between the ancient church.
A lot of white people come to it. They think they can gain powers through it, and maybe they can, various rituals and ceremonies. But I had a wise old elder many years tell me, he says, forget all the powers. You don't want any powers. Everyone is a burden. And what you just want is a connection. And if you have that connection, you will be useful. Maybe it can be useful without that connection. What is, we're all connected to something vastly greater than ourselves that we can't even conceive of. And whether that's some guy sitting on a cloud with a harp, or a great Wakantanka, the great mysterious to Indians, it's all the great mystery. You're confronted with this insoluble mystery by sitting and looking wherever you are at the scene before you. Where did it all come from? How could it all be? The science has an answer for it, that this is all part of an explosion from a black hole or something. It doesn't explain this, these books and this fan and these pictures and this television in front of me that were part of an explosion. That's no explanation at all to me. And how it could be, I don't know. You have to accept that mystery of it. That's what you accept. You accept that that is a mystery. And try to be useful. Try not to hurt other people. Don't get in the wrong thing where you're going out to help other people all the time, because it sort of puts you in a superior position you probably don't want to be in. And just be useful. And to me, that, you know, Leonard gave me that line. It's in his book. You don't have to be perfect. What you want to do is be useful. And that's a wonderful feeling. You want to feel good about life. You strive towards that feeling. It's what makes all this other horrible stuff in some way palatable for me, because I can still sit down here in my little study about twice the size of Leonard's cell and create book after book after book and be proud of it and enjoying it, not making a lot of money, but enjoying it and feeling good about my life that way. But I feel terrible about the world.
Yeah. Well,
so how can I juggle those two things? You can lead a good life in a horrible world. You may have to if you want. That may be, I don't know what's horrible. Maybe what I think is horrible won't be so horrible.
I've heard that even in heaven there's sorrow for the sins of the world.
I bet.
What?
I always felt it probably pretty boring up there. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I can just continue to learn, I'm sure. What you heard, I guess you're in touch with Orville Looking Horse. I've heard from him lately about what anything he's been
on. I haven't been real close with Orville lately. I am trying to get together a book of his writings still for him. I did a smaller book called White Buffalo Teachings for Orville through my dreamkeepers.net site. I encourage people to go there. There's lots and lots and lots about spiritual elders on dreamkeepers.net. And I also wanted to mention haveyouthought.com, where all this stuff about Leonard's new book is now, and all sorts of other stuff. Talks by me, videos, audios, and so forth, on both of those sites.
Excellent.
And Indian Way is a wonderful way if you don't try and pretend you're an Indian if you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a life view that is really a human life view. Very appreciative of what it is to be a human being. And you can read the latest existentialists, and now they're talking about almost the same thing in a way, this amazing existence that we find ourselves in. You know, whether it's a mountain in a valley or a little basement room like I live in here. So,
you know, I really don't understand this political backlash against whites wanting to identify with Indians, because, I mean, hey, you know, 100 years ago, they would have absolutely been thrilled, you know,
well,
if any white
really
person would come and want to identify with them. But now, you know, they've got all
now after the seventh generation prophecy was fulfilled, then they get this giant rush of people. And, you know, so you've got, oh, well, you know, I guess they've kind of banned the use of Chinupa except by Indians. And, you know, but Ed McGough said, well, that's fine. They can use Wotai stones. That's fine, you know. And but, you know, people...
Well, there's huge controversy in that world itself. Orville himself has spoken variously on the subject. Certainly they are very concerned about those whites who come in and assume their ceremonies and their ceremonial objects and put them to their own use without an Indian even present and performing the Indian ceremony. So they're very protective of those ceremonies. There's still no law against it that I know of. And there's an awful lot of argument on the other side. There's many pipe keepers who are white as I am, or who carry a pipe and honor this the old, often Lakota religion, which seems to be the central religion among people who come into this. And that's very tough for a lot of Lakota people, Lakota elders, Lakota ceremonial people, that these others come in and sort of swipe their ceremony, and all of a sudden they're off giving sweats for $400 a piece.
I don't think
or sun dances. I know of some people who actually put sun dances on, and there's not an Indian in sight. And I'm going to let them all solve it.
I don't think they'd mind
any of their ceremonies. I was long ago told, stay away from ceremonies. It's not what you're supposed to write about. You're supposed to write what people say to you in their living room, in their kitchen, or whatever. Not supposed to go there and describe and explain their ceremonies, which you could never do anyway.
It's the idea of having to pay for ceremony that's a big rub. I mean, the prophecy was that the Inipi, you know, the Stone People Watch ceremony was supposed to go worldwide, and it has. But you should have to pay for it.
So there's a lot about that pay, the transfer of money for all of these things, and I don't know that there's any solution to it. I think that there's good people on both sides and some pretty nasty ones on both sides.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't mean being nasty doesn't mean you're right or wrong, but some people take it to great lengths. Orville himself has spoken out and been much attacked for saying that the person who pours should be Indian, and if you're white, you should be invited there. You shouldn't be staging it. And I have a lot of sympathy with that, but I'm not going to condemn people who do otherwise, unless it's gross. You know, there is a lot of gross, just commercialization of it all. And it's an enormous problem, and even those who oppose the suggestions of Orville or the demands of Orville and others who are much more demanding than he is should understand where they're coming from. They're not evil people either. They're trying to save something that is just a little bit left of in this world. Maybe a lot of whites, we think, go out to Indian reses and learn. There's not a lot. There's a few hundred, a few thousand, but it's not a lot in terms of 6-7 billion people on the earth. And they're very concerned. There's just a few of them to save it. It's not like they have vast, endless generations of medicine men there. There's a few guys that know a little bit. Nobody knows what was known even 30 years ago. People die. When you die, you take it with you. There's no way to leave it all behind, no matter how many books you write or students you've had. You can't leave it all behind. We each take an immense amount with us. That's why all these elders dying now, they just take worlds with them, each one of them.
And I know a lot of them.
And they can, and you know, the purpose of dreamkeepers.net was to find a website for each of these elders. There's a lot of controversy. How do you choose an elder? Which elder? You know, hopefully it would be for all of them to have a website that they wanted to, with what they wanted of their lives on it. If they were in jail for 20 years, maybe that won't be on there. It's not like an Encyclopedia Britannica website. It's that part of them they want to leave to the humanity of the future. We are the first generation ever had the Internet.
Yep.
Never heard of a website. 5 years ago, you probably never even heard of a website. And here, each of us has a virtual museum of our lives.
Yeah.
It could be put on there, and that was the purpose, and it was especially for these elders who are naturally being elders, are dying. This last very year, Wallace Black, Elk CeeLo, Black Crow, so many elders died that there are groups of people calling it the year of the elders dying. They're all in their 70s and their 80s. They're the last connection. At least their grandparents remember the old days. And since most people are taught in Indian country by their grandparents, almost more than their parents, there's a tremendous connection. And this, it was my hope to get various elders who could leave us some part. Wouldn't it be nice to have a website of Indians of the past? Famous Indians or even unknown Indians. It would be phenomenal. In the future, they will have it. And I presume the Internet is going to go on, unless there's some atomic war or something. Even then, I suppose it survives. So it's an amazing technology. White man is the inventor, right? That's what the old Thomas Bagnacchia told me. He was the inventor. That's what white man did. He was supposed to come. He went away to the east, and he was supposed to come back to us and complete the circle. Instead of completing the circle, he brought a cross, which is a divider. And that's the way he looked at Christianity, coming across, imposing itself on his religion. Through the people, it doesn't mean that one religion is better than another, and it doesn't mean that at all. Every religion is something that grows out of a people, through a people. But
it said they came with a cross that was equal, had equal legs, like the Celtic cross. They wouldn't have caused the problems that they caused with a cross with that was out of balance.
Well, the cross required that you abandon the old religion.
Yeah.
It is a great, as you know, go to Indian reservation. You've got the traditionals and you've got the Christians. There's a mixture. Old Matthew King was brought up, a wonderful traditional elder, was brought up in the Episcopal faith. His whole family had been Episcopal priests back to the 1880s because you ate better if you joined the church in those days. And every res has its little white churches everywhere. They're all over the place. And there is a certain division among peoples, but they've come to a balance. Matthew said that the white man was very smart. He came and he made some of us Christian, but not all of us. Let some of us be traditional and some of us be Christian, because he knew we would fight each other from then on, and he was absolutely right. So that was that, and that is that. Frank Fool's Crow, the great ceremonial high chief of the Lakota, was a devout Catholic.
Yep.
And
so
you reconcile these things from a white point of view, from an outsider's point of view, you really don't. You just wonder at them. But and yet these people are at the very center of the ceremonies.
Yeah, how could John Red Hat, he was the one that the only time in recent history that the chiefs of all three fairly recognized tribes got together for ceremony. He's asked to run ceremony, and you know he's calls himself a Jew, you know, but he's also, of course, in Cherokee way is different from Lakota way. When I asked John West to explain the difference between Lakota way and Cherokee way, he says it's kind of like the difference between maybe a Catholic and a Free Will Baptist, you know, where he said Lakota way is almost becoming over liturgical and with set ceremonies. He says, but Cherokee. He says, in Cherokee way, you know, if you wanted to incorporate all or part of another religion, that was your business, and that was acceptable. And
I think a few generations ago it was much freer. It's become, as I say, today the remaining traditionalists who still have their religion, the old religion, or try to have it, are in a very fragile position. Everything in society works against having a traditional native religion in this society. How can you watch TV all day and then go out and go into one of these ceremonies and approach it the way you might have years ago? I don't think that the natives ever, they thought they could incorporate Christianity into their religions. They tried. They didn't see why they had to abandon what they did, but the white man demanded it. We built our churches out there, right? And the sister said, you can't do that anymore. You can't go to that ceremony. You've got to do it this way and that way and learn the liturgy and be a choir boy and blah, blah, blah. And it required destroying the old rather than allowing the new to be absorbed into the old. So it's going to always be a schism among Indian people who are striving for the old ways. But Christian people are terrific people. I've been to many rezes where the people mostly are Christian. You go down to Virginia, to the Mattapani or the Pamunkey, those Powhatans people, Pocahontas's people. Two oldest reservations in the country are just outside of Richmond.
Those and state recognized.
Tiny little reservations, tiny, but they're a few. I don't know how many. It must be several hundred acres each. They're beautiful on a lovely river.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting
right.
garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like
dehydrated.
And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond. Put it under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
They're all Baptists and they have wonderful ceremonies. But still, some of the old is there, but they're basically Christian. But they're Indian. They look Indian. They act Indian. They talk Indian. They may be hanged. They may well have their nephew out and back. So it's a complex life. And what you don't want to do is condemn any group of people.
Mm-hmm.
So much condemnation today. Republicans condemning Democrats and vice versa. We don't really have the right to condemn other people. Maybe courts are set up for that reason or official things, but we should try to do what you were talking about. We should try and love other people, be understanding, see where they're coming from, even though we don't like it, even though I'm a white guy and I carry a pipe, and here's this Indian said, you can't carry a pipe. There's got to be a way to surmount that difficulty. He's not really against me sincerely having a pipe.
Sure.
But he's trying to save his religion from being destroyed. Being trivialized, and maybe some of the things he says are wrong, and he's trying to do it. There's some people really against it. They'll come and beat people up or something.
Oh, yeah.
The Sundances are a scene these days of great controversy. A lot of people have a white person at a Sundance, and there's a lot of people like are in their third or fourth year of doing the Sundance. It's a thing that takes a number of years to get through, and suddenly are being told we can't do this anymore. Who's telling us? Again, it's not a law. It is not even Lakota. You know, the elders gathered together over Orville and Bernard Redcherry's dictums and said, we're not going to adopt that. We're not going to prevent somehow, as if they could prevent you from carrying a pipe if you're a white guy. There's some very sincere white guys. There's a lot of white people that get damned for being white, like the Indians get damned for being. And among Indians, as among any group where this is racially oppressed, they have their reverse dislikes of those who are oppressing them. And they're often wrong-headed. We're all so often wrong-headed. Unless you can just have compassion. I don't think compassion can be wrong-headed. Hatred certainly can, but not compassion. attention. Try and understand the other people. They can't be so bad. Republicans can't be that bad. I'm glad my son is a Bush. I say, this is not a bad guy. He doesn't want evil things. He sees it that way. He sees we're establishing a foothold in that horrible Middle East where, you know, everything that goes on there is anathema to, you know, a person living by American ideals. You know, every society is a dictatorship. The people are brainwashed. They're totalitarian religion, Islam, so forth. It's the most totalitarian of the religion. It has total control over its peoples. And so it makes it so powerful and creates such enmity against it these days. And only these religions could teach the compassion that is the first rule of every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't see it. I see the world now sort of divided between the extreme Jews in Israel. That's just really a small part of the people of Israel. A tiny part of Islam that is this extremist, but they'll kill you if you don't like it.
Oh, wow.
And in this country, a Christian, largely a Baptist fundamentalism that's getting pretty close to the others in its extremism and lack of compassion for opposite points of view. And we've got these three religions as it have their fingers on the throat of the world right now, and none of them teach what they're doing. So I just don't understand it. But compassion, yes, that I can understand. Trying to understand, to have a feeling for another person as a human being, to have a feeling for an Indian as a human thing. If my books do anything, I hope they do that. This is a guy talking. This is not some saint or prophet or this or that or miracle worker. It's a guy like you or me. Or a gal. And, see, a little harder to blow them up once you know them. You know, drop our smart bombs on them. So,
well, maybe.
We have a lot to learn in this society, and a lot of it is to be learned from these very people we're destroying. So how do you reconcile that? I don't know. Again, do your best. You don't have to be perfect. Just be useful. It's about the way my life is boiled down. If I need a guiding principle, that's it. Be useful, and you're okay. You weren't meant to understand it. You weren't meant to have powers. You weren't meant to be perfect. But being useful, God or whomever likes that. And it's a good feeling.
Well,
that feels better than anything. That's what Matt used to say. You've got to reach inside yourself. You know what it feels like to be good? Feel good, Harvey. He says, go inside yourself. Feel that part. Now put your hand in there and take that out and thrust it out into the world. That goodness. Goodness, he used to talk about. Goodness. Indian man in his 80s, wonderful guy, noble red man, did a whole book about his words, like a little scripture. Anyway, you can get all those kind of things at HaveYouThought.com if you want to buy them. It's more trouble to mail them out than to sell them to you. And Have You Thought of Leonard Peltier Lately? That's the brand new book, which brings Leonard's story right up to date. There's nothing like it. It's got Leonard's lawyers and all sorts of people in there. I wrote a memoir about my 10 years working on his behalf, and it brings it right up to date as to what's going on in Leonard's case. I hope you'll read it. I hope you won't forget this one man who represents not only the whole indigenous world in a way, but represents the better part of mankind, struggling with the worst part of mankind. He's been the victim of that struggle, and he's 60. Gets out or not, how important is that in regard to the whole world? But I would love to see it happen. We've got a few years out there tending the buffalo. They've offered him a buffalo farm up in Saskatchewan or something like that. Let the poor guy out. The FBI has no fear of this man. They march 500 FBI agents around the White House to frighten Clinton into not pardoning Leonard or not granting him executive clemency. That's what we had worked for 8 years. We thought for sure Leonard would get executive clemency from Clinton, because everybody knows he didn't do it. It's there in the record. And he never mentioned Leonard on the last day. He let every sleazy guy who had $400,000 to give to his library out, but not Leonard. Afterwards, Leonard says, hey, we need a slush fund. Maybe 400 grand would have done it.
Yeah.
Millions have been raised on Leonard's behalf over the years. He's only allowed to have $500, which is, he usually doesn't have that in his prison account. He can't own any other money. So it has to go to some organization, some entity. And it's always, over the years, he's been ripped off a dozen times.
Oh, yeah.
So no way for a guy in jail to make money. If he does, he has to put it into an account that somebody else controls, and somebody else is going to take it. Somebody's going to take it. You can have 99 honest people and leave a dollar bill on a table, right? They'll walk right by it, but still the dollar bill is missing at the end. It was that 100th person. There's always one in 100 who's going to take it. And maybe he needed more, too. You have to be compassionate toward that guy, too. That's Christianity. That's what Christianity was supposed to be teaching. Compassion and love, even for your enemy. So we'll see if the world can resolve all this.
We'll see what happens. We sure will. Well, you know, I really encourage you. You are a hypnotic speaker. You really ought to spend more time on talk radio, Harvey. I really want to encourage you.
I should. I've been, you know, I
promote your book.
I've been here tonight. I go around reading Leonard's words. I really give like performances of his words. It's become. And people say you've got a gift for that, Harvey. You've got a gift for that. So, yeah, I've done a lot of radio. Very little TV, but radio's great because I can do it right from here by telephone.
That's right.
And I don't have to go travel around. And TV stations, they start putting makeup on you. How can you talk seriously?
Well, you're a handsome fellow. What do you need makeup for?
I still got a little good looks left, at, even at this old age.
Where did your ancestors come from in Europe?
Lithuania and the Ukraine.
Ah, okay.
The two sides of the Jewish Pale, which was the area where Jews were allowed to live between Russia and Europe.
Uh-huh.
And,
well, Khazar Empire.
Period. Pardon me?
I think that's what they call the Khazarian Empire.
Oh, the Kazakhstan. Yeah, there was a group of Jews. I don't know that entire story. Arthur Kessler wrote a whole book.
Fascinating story.
And they
lived, they were traders and,
I think Central Asia.
In the dark and Middle Ages, they were practicing Judaism, and it wasn't their original faith, but, man, they did it up really well and actually converted from another belief system and, really fascinating story. Fascinating story.
Yeah.
The only thing I really feel too bad right now in Israel, you know, you've got a lot of black Hebrews that really feel that they shouldn't have to swallow the Talmud in order to be considered. You know, they just say, well, you know, if we have to swallow the Babylonian Talmud, then you know, you can keep your residency. You know, that they're handling.
Well, people and religions were always find ways to split off from the center.
Yeah.
There's always a good reason. There often is a good reason, and all religions evolve and grow, including Native American religion. They change ceremony. I mean, Native American religion dreams are very important. Whole new ceremonies come into being overnight.
Oh yeah,
it can happen. And certainly individuals, each individual does even a sweat differently, much less more complex ceremonies, and it's very personal. It's a very personal religion. It isn't like the Vatican where everything is already prescribed.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a common man's religion.
It is.
If you call it a religion, it's a way of life.
Yeah, it's more of a way.
Religion is already an organization that Indian religion doesn't have organization. Like that.
It's not
societies, but not a big organization. So,
well, Harvey, we sure appreciate your appearing on Prophecy.
It's been a pleasure, and give me a call another time. Always glad to talk off the top of my head here.
absolutely. Well, we'll keep in touch, and this recording will be archived and will be put on the internet at prophecykeepers.com/Arden.html will be there.
Well, great.
As long as the river's running, the
I hope so. And remember that handythought.com because we need to sell a few of the first printing to have a second printing.
Absolutely.
So all we ask. We printed 2,000 to start, so their collector's copies are ready for $23. Big deal.
Wow.
And if we sell 1,000 of those, we can print another 5 or 10,000.
Oh, man, folks.
The rest are all being given away. They're donated to LPDC. It's Leonard's committee and people like that. So we're trying to sell 1,000. And God darn it, go to haveyouthought.com and buy one.
Snap them up.
Buy six for Christmas.
Snap them up.
You'll be helping Leonard Peltier here. So Leonard loves it. There's three chapters like him in there. So enjoy it if you do it. If you don't, the blessing's on you.
Well, I never had a chance to meet him. I know my first traditional teacher, Rolling Thunder, Leonard considers to be his, always considered to be my, his medicine man.
Yeah.
But, you know, Rolling Thunder and Sun Bear, boy, they caught the arrows in the back.
Oh, that's for sure. That's for sure.
It's absolutely amazing because they didn't agree with
him. Well, if you met Leonard, I'll tell you, you would like him. He's a big, humorous, terrific guy. You just will like him. Very, very likable. So, by all means, you can write him a letter.
I wish there was some way we could get him.
Go to his website, leonardpeltier.org, and he'll tell you all about it and all about him. And it's a terrific website.
I wish we could.
So, blessings on you all. Thank you so much, Blue Water, for calling and for talking and about Leonard and the Wisdom Keepers. That's what I know a little bit about.
Thank you so much, Harvey.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye.
See you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
There is a growing movement of people who are deciding to make their lives better. At LifeVantage, we're in the business of change, of improving quality of life globally and restoring the ability to make dreams a reality. Your quest for personal fulfillment begins here. Our flagship product, Protandem, the Nrf2 Synergizer, is the key to fighting oxidative stress. This daily supplement, comprised of natural ingredients, activates the body's antioxidant enzymes to eliminate free radicals, which cause oxidative stress. Protandem has been tested in the laboratories of renowned universities, such as The Ohio State University, LSU, and the University of Colorado, Denver. These studies found on PubMed.gov, the U.S. government's online scientific library, clinically show that Protandem reduces oxidative stress.
When I saw that Protandem reduces oxidative stress by 40% in 30 days, I was all in for the rest of my life.
Everyone begs us for science as an industry. Where's your proof? Well, we have that also.
LifeVantage is devoted to advancing Nrf2 science and leading the fight against oxidative stress.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, friends. This is Will Blue Otter. I have a message here from 1975 from John Wayne. It comes right out of today's headlines. So you Indian folks who are following the progressive trend in politics, you're following the people that supported slavery. You're following the people that have enslaved you ever since the Civil War. Listen to John Wayne.
You know, it's a funny thing, the Indians now, this AIM group have started something that now they're against me for some reason. But I am the only man in pictures that always gave them their human dignity. I never was in a picture. I never allowed myself at any time to do anything that would take their human dignity away from them. And that, to me, is the most important thing in a man's. I have found that a certain type that calls himself a liberal, and I always thought I was a liberal. I came up terribly surprised one time when I found that I was a right-wing conservative extremist. When I have listened to everybody's point of view that I ever met, and then decide how I should feel. I mean, but this so-called new liberal group, Jesus, they never listen to your point of view, and they make a decision as to what you think And they're articulate enough and in control of enough of the press to force that image out for the average person. For some reason, maybe it's these pictures, they have not been able to do that with me. In spite of what they say, people have not taken sides that I'm a, it hasn't affected my career in popularity, let's say. In spite of the fact that they've tried to make it do it. There isn't a hell of a lot that we can do to change human behavior. We keep making laws to try and change human behavior. You can't do it. I think you can accept it and feel how you would feel in that position. You're being conned into Keynesianism and socialism now. But it isn't going to stop the selfishness of human behavior. It isn't going to stop the greed. If you take $20 and give a dollar to every son of a bitch in a room and come back a year later, one of the bastards will have most of the money. I mean, it's just human nature, and you're not going to whip it with a lot of laws. I think when you make people conscious, as communication gets better, and you make people conscious of somebody in trouble, starving or something like that, the average person will help. But of course, now they've got so damn many charities, and there's so much professionalism. You know, there's if you have a charity, you hire some professionals to work up the charity. By the time you get the money, you get $4 for the recipient and $400 for the administrators. So, I mean, Christ, I think there are people who try to affect a thinking where they know more than some other son of a bitch and try to put a false impression on what human nature is. Christ's sakes, we have proven that we go back to hope at the first opportunity. Just throw out a little fish and bam, they're out there ready to grab it. So we are optimistic. We have to be optimistic. Christ, what else would there be in life if you lose optimism?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet, all for $9.99, formerly priced at $29.99. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files, and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keepers Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
You want to get an edge on turning back the clock with just a few pills? Who doesn't? Well, it's no longer science fiction, but science possibility, a potential breakthrough. As I found out firsthand, there may be a way to erase years, at least inside my body. Granted, it's down the road, but some scientists are wondering if a new pill I took might offer a very long life.
It may not look like the Fountain of Youth, but inside this nondescript building, I'm about to become part of an exciting experiment, a kind of guinea pig.
Dr. McCord, okay.
I'm here at the University of Colorado in Denver to meet Dr. Joe McCord, a world-renowned scientist.
This is pretty exciting stuff you're finding, huh?
It is. We're very excited about it.
His latest research could very well unravel the mystery of aging itself. And his decades of experiments may have the potential of adding years to people's lives and possibly prevent chronic diseases like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. It all centers around this small yellow pill, and for me, it begins with a blood test.
It wouldn't be the first time I've given blood for this company.
They want to check my levels of something called T-bars, which is a rough indicator of a person's actual age. T-bars can identify a condition known as oxidative stress, a kind of measure of the wear and tear on our bodies. Oxidative stress, like the rusting of an engine, is not a good thing.
Bad for the body.
Leading to disease.
Leading to disease and leading to malfunction and, importantly, leading to what we call aging. It is a slow progression of increasing oxidative stress. That's the main characteristic biochemically of the aging process.
The problem of aging begins with the very food we eat to give us energy. As our cells burn that food, they also release toxic chemicals. Those chemicals, you may know them as free radicals, react with all the components of our cells, literally bombarding them millions of times per second, damaging all our cells. The result? Oxidative stress. And we all have it. The body fights back with a system of defenses. It makes two antioxidant enzymes, catalase and SOD, whose job is to gobble up the free radicals before they can harm our cells.
So, doctor, how often do I take these?
And so, here I go. With that swallow, I've just become part of a potentially landmark scientific experiment.
Doesn't taste bad.
It's called Protandim, and tests on both mice and humans have already shown that it revs up the manufacture of those good enzymes in our bodies. More enzymes, fewer free radicals to harm us. Whether that will lead to longer life is still unknown. Experiments to see if mice live longer are about to get underway, but it's a tantalizing theory.
Right now, all we know is that this preparation decreases oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is not a disease, just like aging is not in itself a disease, but it's something that accompanies and is attached to many disease processes. So you can see the age-related...
Normally, oxidative stress, measured by those T-bars, increases with age. But in Dr. McCord's tests, taking just one pill of Protandim a day reversed that trend for everyone at every age, even for an 80-year-old.
They all are reduced to the level of oxidative stress that one would expect, frankly, in a newborn or a very young child.
Back to the oxidative stress levels of a child? It sounds too good to be true. Will Protandim work on me?
The scientific evidence is there. The pieces seem to make sense. The question is, does this translate into something that humans can take advantage of?
And so, ancient Eastern healing and modern Western medicine may soon be working together. High oxidative stress is associated with more than aging. It's been linked to hundreds of illnesses.
It's at the very center of many diseases. Liver disease, diabetes, emphysema, asthma. I've studied all of these. Strokes, heart attacks.
Even mental disease.
Yes.
Depression?
Alzheimer's disease, depression.
Dr. James Crapo with the National Jewish Medical Center in Denver is also researching Protandim for the company.
Are you saying that this could be a cure-all?
You're looking at something that will have a small impact, but an important impact.
We make no claims about curing any disease or preventing any disease. We hope that when enough studies are done, perhaps such claims might be able to be made in the future.
Clinical studies to assess Protandim in both diabetes and heart disease should start in 3 to 4 months. But what about my progress? After nearly 2 weeks now, it's time to get my results. Dr. McCord calculates the numbers. The result? My level of oxidative stress has declined dramatically.
45%. That's excellent.
Just look at where I fall on the graph, before and after.
Which, if extrapolated back, is the level you would see in a newborn baby.
Have we turned back the clock? Well, maybe not on the outside, but deep inside, within my cells. Yes, indeed.
Would you suggest I keep taking this supplement?
I would. I can't guarantee it's going to extend your life. I can't guarantee it's going to eliminate any diseases or cure any diseases.
But we do know that oxidative stress is part of those disease processes. And I don't want to wait until I'm 80 years old and find out that I should have taken it.
For more, go to our website at abcnews.com.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Major universities and government agencies initiated and continue self-funded studies following the ABC Primetime Investigative Report you just viewed that originally aired in 2005. These studies continue to reveal more scientific evidence about Protandim's unique benefits. They are published in major scientific and medical journals. The next video will bring you up to date.
Developed after 40 years of research and exclusively for LifeVantage, Protandim is a true scientific breakthrough in anti-aging. Protandim has been reported on ABC, NBC, and PBS, featured in the Wall Street Journal, and described in CNN chief medical correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta's book, Chasing Life, The Quest for Immortality. Protandim's creator, Dr. Joe McCord, is a world-renowned scientist and a pioneer in free radical biology. Dr. McCord is the discoverer of the key anti-aging enzyme, superoxide dismutase. His role in the discovery is so significant, the enzyme is measured in McCord units. For Dr. McCord's discovery of superoxide dismutase and his contributions in free radical biology, he was awarded the Elliott Cresson Medal. This medal is awarded to distinguished inventors and scientists, putting Dr. McCord in the same company as Pierre and Marie Curie, Alexander Graham Bell, Orville Wright, and Henry Ford. Dr. Joe McCord has devoted his life's work to the study of free radicals, their role in aging, and the many problems associated with aging. Consumers spend billions every year on antioxidants in the form of food and supplements, hoping to reduce these free radicals. But antioxidants from these sources can only eliminate one free radical for every one antioxidant molecule you consume. Protandim is scientifically proven to slow cellular damage caused by free radicals. Taking one Protandim one time per day for 30 days turns on these anti-aging enzymes in your body. Your own enzymes eliminate free radicals at a rate of 1 million to 1.
I think any other supplements that are designed to be antioxidant supplements probably are no longer needed because Protandim solves that problem in a much more effective way.
Protandim is a breakthrough poised to revolutionize the anti-aging industry. It is an entirely new and scientifically validated way to fight aging, reducing your oxidative stress levels to that of a 20-year-old after just 30 days.
We found, as many other scientists had documented, that there is a progressive increase in T-bars in your blood the older you get. When these same people took Protandim for 30 days, the age-dependent increase in lipid peroxidation was completely eliminated. After Protandim, we could no longer distinguish the 80-year-old from the 20-year-old.
Protandim is protected by three U.S. patents. Universities around the world continue to initiate and fund their own studies of Protandim and to evaluate how this anti-aging breakthrough can prevent and improve many of the hundreds of problems associated with aging.
Many academic scientists at a number of universities have begun studying Protandim because it represents a new tool. It represents a way of reducing oxidative stress that wasn't available before. There simply was not a good way of doing what Protandim does. Protandim interacts with the DNA in your cells and causes the cells to make more of a set of genes called survival genes. The ingredients in Protandim were actually selected because they are largely metabolized by the liver, which does not interfere with most prescription drugs, which are generally metabolized by the kidneys. So the general answer to that is yes, it is safe. The immediate benefits of Protandim are within several days, the biochemical markers of oxidative stress begin to decrease. And while these are immediate improvements, you may not sense that these things are happening, just as you can't sense what your cholesterol level is, if it's high or low. But nonetheless, these benefits start happening within days of taking Protandim. The advantages to taking Protandim in the long term are that it protects your body from the relentless progression of free radical damage as we age. The anti-aging aspect of Protandim is one that accumulates over time. So the longer you take it, the more protection you will sustain. Missing a dose of Protandim is not a big problem. It takes about 2 weeks for the effects to go away. So if you miss it for 2 weeks, you're pretty much back to where you started from.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Good afternoon. These are on, I presume. I'd like to talk to you today. And do I have control of these slides, or is I do? Okay. Let's get through these really quick, because this is just because you have to get CMEs. And I have to tell you that I am on the Speakers Bureau for GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, and also a nutritional consultant for an HIV nutritional company named Biosource Therapeutics, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about today. What I'd like to talk to you about is something that I find thoroughly fascinating. It is glutathione. It is one of the four endogenous antioxidants, and it is one that I must admit, despite 80,000 published articles in the English literature, through medical school, internship, residency, fellowship, and a fairly long time in academic medicine, I knew nothing about. It is a very interesting molecule because it exists in an accelerated or increased energy state. The energy state is, or increased energy state, is caused by the fact that it's got a free sulfhydryl group and therefore can easily donate the hydrogen to an electron and therefore quench a free radical. Now, let me tell you, because I think it's important, and it is a little bit of a divergence, but I learned about glutathione because of something that you probably all have seen in your practice, and that is a low uric acid. Now, when I was in medical school and when I was a professor of oncology, the only thing I knew about uric acid is when you had a kid that you were going to treat for leukemia, you put him on allopurinol to keep the uric acid down. I knew nothing about uric acid being low, except it kept appearing, and it appeared in about 20% of my patients, and that just didn't make sense. So I finally went into PubMed, and after stumbling around for a long time, I found out that uric acid is the last antioxidant your body uses when it's run out of everything else. When it's run out of gas, okay, it uses uric acid. Interesting. So if that's the last, the question then, what was the first? And that is where I got into glutathione. I've been coming to some of these meetings for a while, and glutathione is very important for a number of things, not all of which I'm going to go into today. But in point of fact, it has a great deal to do with not only well-being, okay, but aging well, or if you will, retarding the aging process. So I think it's very applicable. I'd like to, at the risk of repeating things that you already know, go over some of the things that glutathione is important about. alone in the antioxidant world. Okay, every other antioxidant, when it becomes oxidized, becomes itself a free radical. Glutathione doesn't. It actually recycles other antioxidants. In fact, the body considers it so important that up to 6% of the entire ATP expenditure